From WAMU 88.5 at American University in Washington, welcome to the Kojo Namdi Show. Later in the broadcast, why federal regulators are trying to liberate you from the set-top box you use for your cable television. But first, some lessons from the Washington region that informed the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. But before Flint, there was a somewhat similar crisis right here in Washington, D.C. Joining us now by phone is Mark Edwards. He's currently the Charles Lunsford Professor of Civil Engineering at Virginia Tech. He's a 2008 MacArthur Fellow, and he helped test for lead in both Flint and Washington, D.C. Mark, thank you for joining us.
For having me.
Mark, the president has declared a state of emergency over the safety of water in Flint, an issue you helped to bring to light, but long before you were helping to investigate what was happening in Flint, you were obsessed with the state of the water system in Washington, D.C. Why and what exactly did you do about it?
Well, the D.C. lead crisis became front page news in the Washington Post in January 2004, and people were outraged at that time because they realized that the EPA and the local water company, DC WASA, had hid this problem from them unethically for about 2.5 years. And so it allowed this unprecedented exposure, the worst toxicological exposure to this neurotoxin in modern U.S. history. And we later learned by 2010 that hundreds and probably thousands of DC children were lead poisoned. There were fetal deaths, higher rates of miscarriages. And for those who were around at that time, they know that the outcry was dampened down by a U.S. Centers for Disease Control report in April of 2004 that claimed no one was hurt. And that basically, the public was behaving hysterically, and so it turned into just a massive cover-up that took 5 years for me to expose and show that kids in D.C. really were hurt.
But after you exposed it, you've been trying to make sure that it would never happen again, another D.C. So how did you react upon learning about what was happening in Flint?
Well, because we didn't learn the lessons from Washington, D.C., another D.C., Flint, was inevitable. When the U.S. Centers for Disease Control was hauled before the U.S. Congress and reamed for their outrageous falsified report in 2004, they could have gone one of two ways. They could have said, look, we're sorry, we made a mistake, we'll learn from it, it will never happen again. Instead, they responded by writing another falsified report, an Orwellian rewrite of history, where they claimed that in 2004 they actually told everyone that D.C.'s children were harmed and all these kids were lead poisoned, but everyone misunderstood what they said. So what they were guilty of, they claimed, was bad writing. And they've refused to apologize, they've refused to correct the record, and so this Orwellian rewrite of history still stands, and unfortunately it made Flint inevitable.
Even though Flint detected dangerous levels of lead in one resident's home in February of 2015, the city and state officials did not initially recognize that this was a widespread issue. Mark, how did you first get involved in the Flint water crisis, and what finally caused the city to act?
Well, it was the same thing that got us involved in Washington, D.C., which was parents on their own figuring out children were getting lead poisoned from the water. So in Flint, a mom had figured out one of her twins was growing more slowly than the other. She looked, found out that this child had lead poisoning and no other source in the home. And so she found high lead in her water, and she called us in, and we measured her house and found the worst sustained level of leads we've ever seen, literally hazardous waste levels of lead coming out of her tap at 13,000 parts per billion. So an EPA employee was a hero and actually saved the day. He wrote a memo outlining the imminent danger to Flint's children and the fact that Flint was not following federal law. But unfortunately, his boss, EPA Administrator Susan Hedman, a political appointee, covered the memo up, allowed this heroic employee to be discredited, and she worked a deal with the state where EPA would stay silent about this, and they did so. EPA did nothing, even though they knew Flint was breaking the law. So that's when we became involved, because we realized that, as in the case in D.C., the federal and state primacy agency had totally failed the public in their job to protect children from high lead in water.
In case you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 800-433-8850. What lessons do you think cities, counties, and states should be taking out of the water crisis in Flint, Michigan? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org, send us a tweet at Kojo Show, or go to our website, kojoshow.org, and join the conversation there. Joining me in studio is Yana Lambrinidu. She is an affiliate faculty in the Department of Science and Technology in Society at Virginia Tech, and founder of the nonprofit Children's Environmental Health Organization, Parents for Non-Toxic Alternatives. For the past 9 years, Yana has been conducting investigative, ethnographic, and public policy research on lead in drinking water in Washington, D.C., and nationally. Yana, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kojo.
Just how serious is a lead contamination of this magnitude that we're talking about in Flint, or for that matter in Washington, D.C. 10 years ago? What are the long-term health effects of ingesting lead?
Well, we do know that ingesting lead in drinking water has been associated, as Mark said, with miscarriages, fetal deaths, and elevated childhood lead poisoning, among other things. Obviously, lead is not healthy for anybody. And we do know that the effects of lead poisoning for children are long-term and irreversible neurodevelopmental problems, problems with attention deficit, problems with performance in school, with behavior, with violence, and certainly with success throughout one's life.
What do you think these episodes reveal about the nature of our relationships with the infrastructure around us? A lot of us live in cities with water systems that are nearly a century old.
I think, Kojo, that one of the problems that we are facing is, unfortunately, a disconnect between the reality of our infrastructure, the high prevalence of lead-bearing plumbing materials in our homes, and the health risk that these plumbing materials place us in. Unfortunately, the lead and copper rule, which is the federal regulation that has been designed to protect us from lead in drinking water, does not tell us that it deems us partly responsible as consumers to protect ourselves from lead in water, because water utilities can install corrosion control treatment and minimize lead at the tap, but they cannot prevent the leaching of lead from every single tap and every single home at all times of the year. So we're walking blind through our daily lives, not realizing that even if we have the best and most ethical water utility that exists, we may be getting exposed to hazardous levels of lead in our tap water.
What, therefore, is our responsibility in that regard, we as consumers?
Our responsibility is to take precautions against lead, and there's things people can do, such as filtration, reverse osmosis, use alternative water sources. But even more importantly, I think, demand transparency and demand participation in negotiations and deliberations and in efforts that either our water utilities are making or the federal government or state governments are making to protect ourselves from lead at the tap. As Mark said, citizens have played the most critical role in exposing problems with lead in drinking water in the United States today, and yet citizens are consistently excluded from discussions, task forces, deliberations tables that are supposedly attempting to resolve this issue.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, you'll be hearing from the Chief Executive Officer of the District of Columbia Water and Sewer Authority, George Hawkins. But we'd like to hear from you right now, 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. Did you have any problems with your water during the D.C. water crisis? What concerns do you have about the water you drink here years later? 800-433-8850. I'm Kojo Nandi.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
We're talking water safety in the wake of revelations in Flint, Michigan, with Yana Lambernidou. She's affiliate faculty in the Department of Science and Technology and Society at Virginia Tech, founder of the nonprofit Children's Environmental Health Organization, Parents for Non-Toxic Alternatives. Mark Edwards is currently the Charles Lunsford Professor of Civil Engineering at Virginia Tech. And joining us now in studio is George Hawkins. He is the current Chief Executive Officer and General Manager of the District of Columbia Water and Sewer Authority. George Hawkins, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here, Coach.
You became the head of DC Water long after so much of what Mark and Yana were involved with passed, but how would you describe the work the DC Water system had to do to go about fixing things after the lead crisis came to light in Washington?
It's been and will continue to be quite a significant effort, and I hugely appreciate the work that Mark Edwards and Yana have done to elevate the issues of lead in water. And Yana is exactly right. No matter what any particular monitoring test shows, there could be sources of lead that would show up at some other time. So it's something to be vigilant about in any household, but particularly a household that has a pregnant mother or children. It's not good for anyone, but that's the particular audiences that we are most concerned about. The issue at hand is how to eliminate the source of the lead. What you do in the short run is what has changed in Flint and what was done here in Washington, D.C. The cause of the lead spike was a change in the treatment process for the drinking water for the city, ironically undertaken by a federal agency called the Washington Aqueduct, which is run by the Army Corps of Engineers. Under a rule, an EPA rule about disinfectant byproducts, they were actually required to change from chlorine to chloramine in their treatment process, and that is what triggered a change to the corrosivity in the water, which is for a different reason but a similar outcome to Flint. And lead that was already there started leaching into the water in Washington, D.C. In the short run, what you do is you add something to the water to reduce that corrosivity. In Flint, they changed the source back so that it was coming not from the source. It wasn't a source water problem here in Washington. It was the treatment process. So a chemical was added called orthophosphate, which is a food-grade additive, which reduced the corrosivity and brought the lead levels over time back down. But that is not a solution, because the lead that are in the lines or that could be on in solder or on in plumbing in a home is still there. And the longer-term question of the cost of what it takes to remove those as sources and what you do when it's being removed, because in the short run that often will cause lead to increase, is something that we have we've spent about $200 million on that since 2004 about removing sources of lead. Unfortunately for DC Water or for the effort, what we are able to do ourselves is remove the lead in what's called the public service line. The service line is the connection between the water main in the street and the residents. And there's a part of that service line that's called the public line. That's what we oversee. And there's a private side. And what we can change out is the public side. But we cannot require the private landowner to change the service line on the private side.
This might answer a question that we got from one of our listeners. They shared their concerns about D.C.'s drinking water. We heard from a listener named Bill Tickleman yesterday. He said he noticed something while he was working on a project that he was concerned about. Here's what he had to say.
In the process of the project, I was working with the plumbing, and I was in the basement, and I noticed that from the street, the water line coming in from the street was lead. And to me, it's just a question of time before, you know, some change in the water. I can't imagine that some lead isn't leaching out into those places now, even without, you know, some hugely corrosive thing like Flint.
What's the explanation for what he's describing?
He's exactly right. There are absolutely homes in the district that have lead service lines on both the public side and the private side. And what we encourage any homeowner or resident who is concerned about this possibility is to call us at 202-354-3000. 3600. That's the number of our customer service operation. And what we will do, if someone has a lead line on the private side and they want to replace it, they have to, if they contact us, we'll replace the public side at the same time. So in that case with that gentleman, we should get in contact with him. He would contact us. The private landowner is responsible for changing the private side. We would change the public side. The best outcome is to do both, so you get a full service line replacement rather than one piece or the other.
We got a comment on our website from Paul. Does DC Water use a sampling protocol that would mislead or underrepresent the homes with the most concerning amounts of lead at the tap?
I do not believe so. I mean, a sampling protocol is always under review, so we always are willing to improve it if there's some manner to do so. We've actually reviewed this with Yana, among others. There was an issue in the past that there's flushing before the monitoring is done. We do not do that anymore in the district, so we do not do the flushing. We have wide mouth bottles for the samples themselves. We have no interest whatsoever for understating or miscommunicating the levels of lead. We want to know what they are. We want to know where the sources are. And if there's something to be done, we want to do it. We want the water to be safe for our customers.
And Yana and Mark, starting with you, Yana, what similarities did you see in the process that the District of Columbia previously employed involving flushing and the testing or sampling process that we saw in Flint, Michigan?
Yeah, I think that was a real stark similarity and very alarming that both cities in the past used what George referred to as pre-flushing, which really is an instruction that asks consumers to flush their taps the night before stagnation. And which is a method that's actually a remedial measure, and it's known to clean out the taps, clean out the pipes of lead the night before sampling. It's not a good idea to do that right before you're trying to capture the amount of lead that people might be exposed to. And I do want to say that we have worked with George very successfully, I think, in the past in improving DC Water's sampling protocol. And there's no comparison in how DC Water monitors our water for lead today and how it did in the past. This does not mean that we are completely finished with the questions that we have and concerns that we have about whether really the highest risk homes are being sampled, what kind of water flow is being used. There's various things that we need to ensure are being done correctly, because the way the lead and copper rule works is that even a slight shift in which homes you target or how you sample can actually make the difference between meeting the law's lead standard and exceeding the law's lead standard. That means it can make a difference between telling people that your water is okay to drink and issuing emergency public education that there's a problem.
And that's precise. Go ahead, please, Mark.
In 2006, when DC WASA said the water was safe because of this pre-flushing approach, CDC later found out that children were being lead poisoned from water in that time frame. So that episode shows exactly how dangerous this gaming of sampling and pre-flushing is, and unfortunately, they were still doing it in Flint.
Here is Justin in Washington, D.C. Justin, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I was just trying to figure this out, and this flushing thing actually kind of also speaks to it a little bit. With what was the EPA's incentive for covering this up? As a whistleblowing organization or an organization that's supposed to be doing good, like, what would be their incentive for actually covering this up? Because all they can do is get screwed over, get in trouble for doing so, correct? And then a secondary question would be, with this pre-flushing, wouldn't that just flush out the water that potentially has leaching from inside the home and then would be getting the water from the source and testing that water? Isn't that the point of it, or what am I missing?
Mark Edwards.
So the first question, EPA had an incentive to cover it up because it was their regulation that inadvertently caused this. They also knew about this problem for a period of years before it was exposed in the Washington Post. And when EPA fails in D.C., they fail twice, because they're not only the federal government, but they're also the primacy agency. So the lead in water was EPA's lead, and they colluded with the CDC to cover up the health harm, and then they refused to make DC use protocols that did not allow this pre-flushing, which triggered a second wave of lead poisoning even after the lead crisis had passed.
The second part of the question, here's George Hawkins.
As an ex-EPA employee, I find when I was there, it was our entire objective to protect health and the environment. So allegations of cover-ups are very distressing to me and any EPA employee. But on the question of the second, when the caller asked, well, wouldn't you want to know what the source water is? In fact, that isn't what we want to know in most cases. The water in Washington, D.C., even in 2003, that was in the Potomac, that was in the water main out in the street, is extremely unlikely to have lead in it. Where the lead comes from is that connection from the service line into the home through the plumbing in the home, and perhaps past lead that has gotten caught up in the aerator or part of the plumbing. So you do want to know what the lead in the water is in the water that's in the line at the home. The idea behind flushing, I'm not defending it, but as far as I understand it, is that you were supposed to flush for a certain number of minutes in the evening and then let it sit, I think, Liana, was 6 hours before then the monitoring was then done 6 hours later, so that there was always the same level of stagnation in all the monitoring. It would all be 6 hours. The challenge is that a lot of what might have been caught up in the aerator or otherwise might have been flushed through and not been in the monitoring at all. And that's why at DC Water now, and this very much came to us from Mark and Yana, we do not do the flushing part of the protocol in our monitoring. But as Yana said, this is always everything we do is subject to improvement, and we're always interested in input to make our program better.
I don't understand the question, but I'll pass it on. It's an email from Kim. Can you please let us know what DC's water rating is? I've read the DC water report, and it doesn't display the ratings as much as other municipalities do. In summation, how is it in DC, please?
Gosh, that's a broad question. We're very open about our ratings on a variety of topics. I encourage her to email me at george.hawkins@dcwater.com and explain what rating it is she's talking about, because I'm happy to find out exactly what she's referring to. By the way, at dcwater.com/lead. We do have a lot of materials. Iana, for one of many, helped us on those materials. They were ours, so I'm not trying to blame her for any of it, any of its mistakes or omissions. But we do have a lot of information on lead and water right on our website that is accessible.
Here is Beth in Purcellville, Virginia. Beth, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Thank you for taking my call. I had read an article recently that while Flint, Michigan, of course, deserves the recognition so it can have some remedy and solution for the families that have been affected, there are a number of counties around the nation, a concentration of which are in Alabama and Louisiana, that have higher rates of lead poisoning than Flint, Michigan do. And I feel like people are unaware of this because this was a sudden change in Flint, Michigan, but the counties in Louisiana and Alabama certainly could be using the state of emergency and some sort of recognition and intervention in those locations. But because it doesn't get recognition, it doesn't seem to be taking the same sort of stage as Flint, Michigan does.
Yana, what do you know about this?
Let me just say,
go ahead, Mark.
The danger from lead and water exposure is different than the statistics monitored by the CDC for lead paint exposures. Lead and water affects the fetus more so than lead paint because mothers are less exposed to lead dust and lead paint. There's studies in Germany that show that at least 50% of a mother's lead burden is coming from water. And moreover, the youngest children, the CDC is just assuming that the water is safe. So mothers using tap water for infant formula are giving those children the most massive dose of lead imaginable per body weight, and those children's blood lead is not even tested. So the real concern in Flint is not the statistics that are being reported, but the fact that these statistics are not gathered on the most at-risk groups for water exposure. So those statistics underestimate the extent of the problem, as was the case in Washington, D.C., for the studies we did in 2009.
Yana, other parts of the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we do know at this point that because lead-bearing plumbing is widespread, whether you have a lead service line or lead solder or lead-containing brass that was being installed even up until 2013, most homes in this country are really very highly likely to have some lead-bearing plumbing bringing their water to the tap. up. So it is a very serious concern. And what we've learned recently from an industry-funded study is that if the lead and copper rule were to require utilities to monitor in such a way as to capture the water that was sitting overnight in lead service lines, this is not something that is happening today. But if the protocol were changed to capture that water, 50 to 70% of water utilities with lead service lines around the country would today exceed the EPA lead standard for lead and would be required to issue immediate public education to let their consumers know that they need to take precautions. So this is a very serious concern. And I think given this data and a lot of other information we have about the dangers of lead service lines, we, I think, can safely say that there are millions of people sitting in homes that are posing a very serious health risk to them and their children.
Well, we got a tweet from Regina who said, my eldest son had elevated lead levels in D.C. during this period, diagnosed with autism in 2008. We've been drinking bottled water ever since our doctor told us. And then there is this from Barbara in Alexandria, Virginia. Barbara, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you, Kojo. I just was standing in the kitchen listening to this, and it brought back so many memories of living on Capitol Hill 10 years ago and being pregnant and reading in the newspaper that our block where we lived was one of the elevated levels for lead. And I just remembered being so scared and going to the doctor and having a test. And fortunately, I didn't have any elevated levels of lead, but I appreciate shows like this. And I guess my comment is, I can't think of a better time for citizen journalism and student media, excuse me, social media, because the story of Flint really needs to get out. Imagine what it would have been 10 years ago if we didn't have awareness of this and all of the families and children who could have been affected even more than have been.
Thank you very much for your comment. George, D.C. Water sued the EPA late last year because of new limits on the amount of E. coli in the Potomac River. What is this complaint about, and what do you see at stake?
That's a completely separate issue from lead in water. That's okay. A question that it reflects in our could be reflected in the permit for our giant Blue Plains facility. And it's mainly a technical question of how a mean is established for colonies of bacteria that changes very dramatically. And it's one that was new, and we think there was a technical mistake made in our permit that we can get corrected. It has nothing to do where it's one of the most regulated and advanced facilities of its kind in the world, but it's not connected. That's for Blue Plains discharge and how a particular number is calculated, as opposed to anything to do with lead and water. I think the points that are being made here are exactly right. Lead is a very serious risk. It exists at various levels in communities around the country. It was prevalent in fixtures and in service lines for homes built before 1940 in particular, but could be in others as well. As Jana pointed out, brass at certain levels has lead in it that's been used in much more modern times. I'm hopeful that the focus, it's incredibly unfortunate. You don't want Washington, D.C. or Flint to ever occur. But the question is, what can we take advantage of this terrible challenge we have to focus on this issue? It costs a lot of money to replace these lines and the sewers that are connected to it and have a commitment of public and private efforts to do so, not just in Flint or in D.C., but across the nation.
Running out of time, Mark, this is going to be the last question. You'll be on Capitol Hill this week observing the congressional hearing about Flint. What are you hoping might come from Congress in the wake of all this, if anything?
Well, I'm hoping that we can finally learn the lesson of Washington, D.C. and stop this from happening again. And one of the saddest things about what occurred in D.C. was that, unlike Flint, where there's now millions of dollars being poured in to help the children with their health harm and get extra help, in Washington, D.C., children just got the shaft completely. Not a single thing was done to help those children with their lives. And to this day, D.C. Water is fighting this in the court system. And it's an outrage what's happened.
Mark Edwards, Jana Lambrinidou, George Hawkins, thank you all for joining us. Got to take a short break. When we come back, why federal regulators are trying to liberate you from the set-top box you use for your cable television. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.